This is All In. I'm Miriam Sob. The 93rd Annual Academy Awards aired on Sunday. Today, we're talking with two local film critics and passionate film fans to get their thoughts. And later in the show, we'll talk to the artistic director of Heartland Film to get an update on efforts to incentivize film production in Indiana and to see how local theaters, drive-ins, and film festivals are doing right now. If you have any questions or comments on our show today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. Just give us your name and where you're calling from and a quick question or comment. We're joined now by two guests. Matthew Soucy is the host of Film Sociology at WFYI, and Chris Lloyd is a film critic at the Film Yap. Matt, let's start with the most obvious question. The Oscars were on Sunday. What did you think?
Well, that's such a loaded question. My number one film from last year was Nomadland. So I was really excited that it got Best Picture and that Frances McDormand got Best Actress. Well-deserved. There were some surprises and some that I don't think the show had in mind when it came to how things went down. I think they made the most out of the situation. Obviously, it was a smaller looking affair. Steven Soderbergh, the great filmmaker, was the director of it this year. That's why we had all these kind of surveillance looking cameras all over the place. So, I mean, they were able to pull it off. I'm assuming that there was temperatures taken or something like that before they entered the space. But I mean, this and the Tonys, these are the only award shows I watch. So even if it's dull for 3 hours, it's just 3 hours out of my life. So I'm okay. But yeah, I was giggling because I knew there were surprises that they didn't expect, and not just who got awards and who didn't.
Mm-hmm. And when you mean surprises, do you mean like some technical glitches?
Well, I think the idea to do Best Picture not last kind of threw off everybody, because I think everybody watching assumed, well, we had a colleague mention that, well, now we have the more competitive race, because I think a lot of people just assumed Nomadland was going to be a slam dunk. So the fact that we were waiting for a posthumous tribute to Chadwick Boseman and we never got it. Mm-hmm. And the fact that the winner of the award was not there, and the fact that you had performance artist Joaquin Phoenix up there for it, it just didn't turn into the broadcasting ending that they wanted.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I did find that a little strange that the winner of Best Actor wasn't there. But I mean, I'm assuming it's pandemic. You know, how is he going to get over there?
Right, exactly. But so I think they wanted it was not the ending they wanted to the show. And then there was apparently a post discussion that they had, and that I didn't watch that, but that I was hurt. I read that it was very uncomfortable because they were just filling time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And what about you, Chris? What did you think about the show last night?
Yeah, overall, I thought it was a pretty good show given the circumstances, but that the finale was just absolutely clanging and anticlimactic. They clearly finagled around with the format so that they could have a tribute to Chadwick Boseman at the end, because everyone assumed that he was going to win. Mm-hmm. I don't like the idea of that, but if you're going to do that, if you're going to, you know, manipulate events so that it's going to be like that, you better be darn sure that that's what actually is going to happen. I hate to say it, but this might have been a situation where they should have had someone actually sneak a peek inside the envelope to find out. I guess if nothing else, this will end accusations that, in fact, the game is fixed and that they know who's going to win before him, because clearly they didn't.
Mm-hmm. I mean, could they have done some kind of, I don't know, extra Oscar for Chadwick?
I don't know. I mean, in general, things like that tend not to play very well unless it's maybe a few years after they've died or something. I don't know. I think just everyone assumed that he's going to win because he had run the table on pretty much all the preliminary events, the Golden Globes, these Screen Actors Guild Awards. So it seemed like a pretty good bet, but I don't know why they couldn't have just done it in the regular order. So we would have had that same awkward moment, you know, 15 minutes earlier, and then we could have had the big triumph of Best Picture at the end, because I'm trying to remember, it's an old school Hollywood saying, as they said, you know, give them three good scenes and a good ending and people will like your movie. Well, if you muff up the ending, that's all that people are going to remember.
Right.
You could have ended with Frances McDormand howling and they dropped the ball on that.
Well, I will say, I mean, I watched as much as I could I don't want to sound mean and say as much as I could tolerate, but it just wasn't the same as Oscar shows that I've seen in the past. The nostalgic, I don't know, the big theater full of people. I was like, am I at some private dinner party? It felt almost like I was a voyeur in that situation.
Yeah, I wonder. I counted maybe like 75 people you could fit in that room. There's way more nominees than that. So even with the people who are remote, so I was just wondering, were they cycling people in and out to fill the chairs?
That's an interesting thought. Yeah. And Matt, were you surprised by anything? I know you mentioned there's some surprises here and there, but was there anything that stuck out to you that was completely like...
We should stop saying Glenn Close is going to win. We should just really stop with that. And she made up for it by doing a dance move, and got captured on social media. And she's just a great sport. She really is. And, you know, we talk about how the Academy likes, and I call this the Film Geek's Final Four. You know, for every theory, there's a counter theory on who should win and why and how. Well, in the Best Supporting Actress category, we got a lady who got a Career Achievement Award. Just the ugly Americans didn't see it coming. So, but that was a great, and the fact that she acknowledged, Chris, how do you pronounce the actress's name? Because I'm terrible.
Oh, I actually did look this up in preparation for my own. I'm trying to remember exactly how it goes. I don't want to muff it live on the air and say it's terrible. I think it's Yu Young Yaon, but I'm not 100%. I actually did look it up beforehand. And now I've forgotten.
Okay.
And when we're talking about these winners, Chris, were you happy with who won? Were you disappointed by anything?
Oh, I'm always disappointed. I mean, it seems like it's pretty rare that my favorites win and often don't even get nominated. My favorite film was Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, which did not get a Best Picture nomination for no reason I could figure, or screenplay or director, both of which I thought it deserved. I think everyone expected I was expecting Viola Davis to win Best Actress. She and Frances McDormand had kind of been vying back and forth with Carey Mulligan as the stalking horse. I figured Viola Davis was going to overcome her, although Frances McDormand was my pick. One surprise was the father winning screenplay over Nomadland. I really thought Nomadland had that one in the bag, and the father kind of just came out of nowhere. Although Thomas Vinterberg did give a very moving acceptance speech for that, talking about his daughter.
And what about you, Matt?
I think, and to jump on with Chris, Ma Rainey's was my number two. So I was not going to be disappointed if Viola Davis got it, but it should have gotten way more nominations. I was excited for Promising Young Woman get Best Original Screenplay. We'd mentioned that Carey Mulligan was kind of the dark horse, and I thought she sort of had a chance to get Best Actress. But as far as evening it out and making sure, you know, this film gets one and this film gets one for something, I was happy with Promising Young Woman. That's obviously the revenge film people are going to be talking about for years, and that's a film that also gave me the biggest laugh this year, was that finale and the use of Angel in the Morning. That's, and if you haven't seen it yet, I'm not going to spoil it.
Well, were there any awards that you would want to see handed out, regardless of how realistic it is?
I want them. You know what? I want the Career Achievement Awards back. I'm tired of them splicing the technical aspects, the career achievements. As I mentioned, this is the one film award show I watch. I don't care if it's 4 hours. I'll watch all of it. It's fine. Plus, you get, and even in something like this, in the case of the smaller categories, you get the best speeches from those that are not actors, who are absolutely genuine. You know, our Best Supporting Actress winner was schmoozing with Brad Pitt on stage. That's fun. We like that. But to have a sound designer or costume designer or editor get their moment, their global moment in front of millions, maybe billions of people, we want to see that. That's genuine. So I want it back to the old format. Obviously, I want everybody to be there. I want it back to being 4 hours.
And what about Chris, do you agree with that? Does it need to be longer, or should it just be like an hour?
I'm fine with it being longer, but they need to start it earlier, because us old people don't do well past midnight.
Well, then there's all those, you know, 3-hour pre-shows and post-shows, and I guess you gotta dedicate a whole day just for the Oscars. Before we wrap up to a break, is there anything that changed what you thought of the Oscars this year? I guess, you know, with the pandemic and everything, did it make you feel like it's never going to be back to the way it used to be?
Oh, well, let's see. So the ratings are in. I think they're down over 50%, 60% in the key demo, as they say. So I'm hoping that's just going to be a one-year dip. I mean, overall, I do grade on a curve here. You know, I thought they gave a decent show given the prescriptions that they were under. I mean, I was entertained. The one thing I missed was the songs. Mm-hmm. I do miss seeing the live performances of the songs. But other than that, you know, it still had a nice, graceful feel to it.
All right. Well, we'll be back with our guests after a quick break. We're talking about the Oscars, which aired on Sunday, and we'll talk more about movie culture in Indiana and how things have changed during the pandemic. If you have any questions or comments for the show, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam So, back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. We're talking movies today. The Oscars aired on Sunday, and we've got two local critics and movie enthusiasts here to get their reaction and their thoughts on movie culture in Indiana. We'd love your questions or comments on the topic. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from, at 866-476-3881. With us is Matthew Soci, the host of Film Sociology at WFYI, and Chris Lloyd, film critic at The Film Yap. So we talked a little bit before the break about how the pandemic kind of changed things with the way the Oscars were. Now I'd like to talk a little bit about, you know, what you think about movie going. What is the pandemic going to do to that? So Matt, for example, you know, do you think people are going to be eager to get back to the theaters, or has this pandemic kind of killed people's, I guess, joy in going to the theater?
Well, there's gonna be a mix of that. I mean, it's already happening. Some theaters are opening. It also probably helped that you have a giant lizard fighting a giant ape to entice people to get back in. It's a question of are the safety precautions happening? I haven't gone yet. And I'd love to correct the fact that Bad Boys for Life was the last film I saw in a theater. That should never, ever, ever happen. So, but yeah, I think so long as you're calling ahead but I think it's like no different than going to a live music venue or going to a restaurant. Some people are going to be more comfortable than others, and some folks have already done it. So it's just a matter of time, I think, and patience.
Mm-hmm. And Chris, do you agree, or do you think people are just going to start streaming from now on?
My hope is that people will return to theaters, but we're not going to see them in those mass numbers. We're still going to have spacing and restrictions, which means is that kind of precludes those big opening weekends, those $500 million opening weekends that the studios really like for their big tentpole films. So I'm worried that, you know, we've had films like Black Widow and others that have been moved back, and I'm afraid they're going to get moved back again. I wrote a piece last November. It was called On Movies, Theaters, Studios, Streaming, and the Future of Watching, if you want to go read that on the Film Yap. And basically what it says is, unfortunately, I think we're looking at a generational shift. This mm-hmm. was a seismic event where people found that they still wanted movies, but they found that they were content to watch them at home on their TV or even on their phone. Which is not the way movies are supposed to be seen. I mean, it mm-hmm. is a communal experience. You do really want to be surrounded by 200 or 300 strangers to have the full experience. But I think what we're going to see is movie theaters are reopening. A certain segment is going to be comfortable going back if they're not already going back. But I think a lot of those casual viewers are going to be staying away. So I think unfortunately, we're going to be looking at a big downturn in the future of movie theaters.
Mm-hmm. And Chris, does that mean that movie theaters are going to die off and it'll be kind of like the drive-ins?
It could go a lot of ways. I mean, the thing is, once you've built the movie theater and, you know, you have everything there, you sort of have all your sunk costs. So actually keeping it running, and you can compress it by having less staff and fewer showings per day and so on to save money. For those in the know, movie theaters actually make extraordinarily little money from selling movie tickets. Almost all of their revenue is from the concessions. So if they could figure out a way to sort of change up their business model, where they can maybe still deliver those concessions,
right,
in a way where people are spaced out, give them more of a, not just snacks, but have we have a few dinner theaters here in town that are quite good, where you can actually get a really good meal sitting down at the movie theater. Possibly more people will be attracted to that, where they can actually have a nice meal while they're watching the theaters, and the theaters can continue to make money.
Mm-hmm. And Matt, I mean, what are your thoughts? Do you see movie theaters bouncing back at all?
I'm with Chris on this. I think it's going to be a smaller bounce. The fact that we're used to seeing a film could get screened 5-6 times in a day, it might go back to small town America, where maybe once or twice a day, just to keep things going. But I think, for a generation, like he's mentioned, the fact that you can get alcohol at some places, you can get full meals at some places, that's going to be more family grown-up trip, while younger people are watching stuff on their phones or watching more at home on streaming.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder about with streaming and stuff, for example, Disney movies coming out on Disney Plus, you can pay extra to get it right when it comes out. Is that going to stick around? That's just, it seems like an added revenue stream for these companies. Do you see that sticking around even when theaters start to pick up, Chris?
It depends on who we're talking about. Disney in particular has been very savvy with what they've done, and they have now constructed for themselves a completely vertical production, distribution, and exhibition model where they don't need anybody else. So they are less compelled to actually put their movies in theaters. I think when pandemic eases, they are going to put their bigger films back in, the big animated films, the Marvel films. But maybe some of those smaller films, those $20 to $30 million budget films might just end up staying on Disney. Mm-hmm. Some of the other theaters, like Warner Brothers has partnered up with, I think it's HBO Max, to show their movies, but also putting them in theaters. So people are sort of finding their way, but everything I've read basically says that the studio chiefs they're planning on streaming as being their primary distribution model in the years forward.
Mm-hmm. And Matt, you have some thoughts on that?
Well, I was going to make some snark about paying $30 to watch Mulan, but then again, your concessions and treats are at home in your kitchen. Mm-hmm. So you probably are getting away a little bit easier than paying for concessions and for a sitter or what have you, if you go out.
Right. Well, I waited until it actually came on Disney Plus without being that premiere or whatever. I was like, I'll just wait. It's going to be there eventually.
I think that's like it's the new renter. You see a film and you think it's okay. You're like, it's a renter. And now it's like, it's a streamer.
Yeah. Well, I wonder, when things are streamed, does that sort of degrade the quality of the film in terms of not seeing it on a big screen with being immersed into it? I wonder if that presents a challenge even for award seasons, if everybody's just watching it on a laptop.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the thing about movies and where it differs from what had been the primary competition, television, was, I always said television is about a relationship. It's about, having a show, whether it's a series or a miniseries, but tuning in long term and having that relationship, not even just with a particular show, but like, okay, it's Thursdays. We have these two shows that we like to watch. That's our night for watching or whatever. Mm-hmm. Movies are events. It's supposed to be special. It's supposed to be, did you hear about that movie? People anticipate movies for literally a year before they come out. I can't wait for Black Panther. I mean, people are just hyped up like crazy. Mm-hmm. And so that really has been the driver of the culture of movies, is the anticipation of an event. It's special. You have to go out. It's a proactive act where you leave the house and make a decision to go do something. See, that's the thing is, going to the movies is considered in our minds doing something. Mm-hmm. Watching something at your homes is more passive. It's like, well, I'm home. I'm looking for things to do. There's all these streaming into my house. Which one do I want? And so
right.
the net result of that is streaming on movies reduces them to more of just a disposable commodity. And that's mm-hmm. the advantage they've always had over television and to, up till now, Netflix and other streaming services. And I think once we reduce them to that being on the same level, I think they lose their edge.
Right. You know, I think, you know, people talk about COVID fatigue. I feel like I have viewer fatigue because there's just so much content to stream that you get to this point where you're just like, I need just somebody to give me like five movies that came out at the theater that I can pick from. And that's it. Too many choices.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's something from my line from that that article I mentioned. I said, between the death or crippling of movie theaters, the rise of streaming services and video on demand, and this slow decay by formula of television, my controversial hot take is there's too much content. There's so much stuff to watch. We don't know what to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, then they have these algorithms now where it's like, don't know what to watch? We'll just pick one for you. So they're always, you know, 10 steps ahead of trying to keep us on these streaming services. Matt, what is there something that you wouldn't miss if theaters disappeared? Is there something about the experience that you'd be like, I'm fine without it?
People who talk on their phones and won't shut up. Seriously. People make fun of the art house films. Nobody's yakking on their phone if, Max von Sydow is playing chess with death. You can say, again, you're hoity-toity, but these are places where you get real butter on the popcorn, you get real liquor, and you'll have people gabbing or bringing their six-month-olds to an art house film. Nobody's bringing a six-month-old to Nomadland. So I would miss rude audiences, but that kind of comes with the territory. And piggybacking what Chris was saying, when a film is great and you can hear the reaction from the audience, it's even better. But yeah, rude audiences could just jump in a hole for all I care.
And Chris, is there anything that you wouldn't miss if there were no theaters anymore?
Not too much. You know, maybe like sticky floors and messy bathrooms. I have a pretty good ability to tune out noise, even people. I've been at screenings like with Matt or other members of the.
Wait, are you saying you tune out Matt at these theater?
Yes, he does.
Matt's easy to tune out, but no, yeah. I mean, I've had things where I've sat through a movie and afterwards another critic was like, that guy behind us was talking the whole movie. And I was like, really? I didn't even notice. I'm pretty good at tuning stuff like that out. But yeah, I mean, in general, the pluses much, much outweigh the negatives for me of going to a movie theater. I love the cinema.
Mm-hmm. And Matt, what was it like, you know, this past year doing your show, talking about movies now that, you know, there aren't really many people going to the theaters?
Well, it's funny. I was talking with Chris a couple weeks back, and I need to have my guests back on the show, and I think I was spoiled to have them in studio, and I feel like I would interfere if I called them. But basically, the last year has been, I mean, I still have movies that are sent to me, and there were still press screenings that we could have of streaming pictures. But I went and just basically told people on Facebook and Twitter, what have you watched this week? And I have spent anywhere from 10 minutes to over an hour reading other people's comments on what they've been watching, whether it was new, old, what have you. And after a while, I started getting notes from people going, I keep a notepad by my TV to write down titles. I can't wait for Thursday morning when you ask. I watch something because you talked about it. Or in my case, there's a DVD or Blu-ray that's been on my pile that I bought for a long time, and somebody brought it up on the list and I watched it. So I just finished a Federico Fellini box set. I know the struggle is real, but I find stuff to watch even and try not to go scoping through the screens, like you say, about as far as fatigue. You start seeing the same film in four or five different categories if you're streaming. But no, I think I've made the most of it. I'd still love to have guests in the studio or someday, one of these days. But yeah, it's been just making sure people are watching stuff to get a distraction. That's what movies are for, is a distraction.
Well, Chris, what was it like for you to be a film critic in this past year?
It's been interesting. It's much more work in that before things were pretty simple. We would pester the studios for screenings and, you know, we would generally get them. And so, you know, you would have probably like, you know, maybe a couple nights a week where it's like, okay, it's Tuesday night, it's Wednesday night, I'm going to a movie theater to see a movie, and then I come home and I write the review. And now we have all these different sources of content, and I hate referring to movies as content, but we'll let it ride, where every week, every month, I have to be like, okay, what is coming out in theaters? What is coming out on VOD? What's coming out on Netflix? What's coming out on Amazon, Hulu? And now we've got, Shudder and HBO Max. So just in terms of running a website and trying to make sure everything is covered, it's much, much harder because just having to know everything that's coming out. And I admit I've had a couple of weeks this past year where literally something fairly notable was coming out and I wasn't even aware of it until the day of. Mm-hmm. So that's been tough. I'm really not a fan. So the way it's working now is instead of having those screenings, the theaters have all sorts of different systems for online screeners, which is nice, but the quality and access varies. Some are very easy to use. Some are an absolute pain in the tuchus. A lot of the times you'll be watching it and it stops, the streaming is interrupted because their servers are all bubbling. I've had times where I had to like watch a movie, part of it, and I'm watching at home. I've got two little kids and a dog. So sometimes I might watch a movie for 20 minutes, stop for an hour, watch 20 more minutes, finish another hour the next day and finish it up the following evening. That is not the way to watch a movie. That is not mm-hmm. the way movies are. And I don't think it's really affected my ability to give an honest opinion to my audience, but for my own personal satisfaction, I don't think it's the way it should be.
And you'd prefer to head to the theater, I take it?
Yeah, I mean, the streaming screeners had just sort of to kind of come onto the rise for small independent films, foreign films, documentaries over the last 3 or 4 years previously. So I do want to hold on to that because, it's tough for me with little kids to leave the house two nights a week and leave my wife all alone with them. Mm-hmm. But if we could go to a hybrid system where maybe once a week I'm going to a theater to see a screening of a big profile film and maybe I do the smaller films on streaming basis, that's fine.
Well, Matt, what do you think is next as we get ready to wrap up here? What's next for movie fans? Are they going to be, stampeding to the theater when the doors open, or is it going to just be a trickle?
I think it's what's the next big film that's coming out? And as Chris said, I haven't looked that far ahead. So I think when the school year gets done, so hopefully enough time has passed that more people are getting vaccinated and people are getting more comfortable with going out. There should hopefully be a gradual a number of folks that are going to see stuff, but I can't, I don't know what the next big film is that I'm looking forward to. I mean, the James Bond film, I think, has been pushed back to the end of the year, the last time I heard. So I'll just keep watching what I'm watching. But I think once the school year is done, you're going to see probably more families put their toe in the water or find a drive-in. Drive-ins became huge because of the pandemic. And if that's a good, that wouldn't be a bad stepping stone if you want to get out of your house.
Mm-hmm. And Chris, what do you see the future, I guess, in the next couple months being for movies?
It'll slowly start to creep up. I think the big thing is going to be when people in the age 12 to 25 demo become vaccinated widely. That'll make a big, big deal because that is the prime audience for movies. Those are the people who have the free time, maybe a little bit of free money. So if we, as the summer goes on and we get more and more of those kids and young adults vaccinated, I think it'll make a big deal. I do also want to say about drive-ins, we should mention Indie Film Fest launches this Thursday, April 29th, with a showing of The Dry at Tibbs Drive-In. And that's been a great way to kind of do things for the film festivals, to have a hybrid online and drive-in for the big special presentation. So I'm hopeful. Like I say, I don't think we're ever going to get back to 100% of where we were a year plus ago. But if we can get to 60, 70% of where we were, we have a viable medium for film, and the right one, I think.
All right. Well, thank you both of you for taking the time. Matthew Socey is the host of Film Sociology at WFYI, and Chris Lloyd is a film critic at The Film Yap. You can find his work at thefilmyap.com.
Movies is magic.
Thank you. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. The Oscars aired on Sunday, so we're talking movies today. We had two local critics and film enthusiasts on earlier in the show, and we're talking now to a leader at Heartland Film about how film festivals have adapted and what the future of movie watching might look like. As always, we'd love to hear your questions and comments. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a short voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. We're joined live now by Greg Sorvig, Artistic Director for Heartland Film. Welcome, Greg. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thank you. Glad to be back.
So can you tell us a little bit about what Heartland Film does for those who don't know?
Yeah, we're a nonprofit arts organization. We've been based here in Indianapolis for 30 years. Believe it or not, it's our 30th anniversary. So, you know, planning a 30th anniversary festival during a pandemic can be a lot of fun. Some extra challenges in what should otherwise be a celebratory time. But yeah, we basically showcase movies, inspiring stories from all over the world through mostly known for our film festivals, the Heartland International Film Festival, which is every October. And then we expanded to an all shorts. So short films are 40 minutes or less. And we have a short film festival called Indie Shorts, which takes place in July. So we do that. We have year-round screenings and events. We've pivoted to some online screenings as well. And yeah, we're really excited to be here and to continue to be bringing films to film people all over the world, not just in Indiana, which has been a silver lining of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of the pandemic, how were you able to adapt with the festival?
Yeah, I would say in the past year, we went from thinking, hey, maybe there won't be festivals, period, to wondering if we could safely have festivals, to eventually planning and finding a way to pivot and adapt, really to satisfy all of our stakeholders. And that's filmmakers, distributors, moviegoers, and sponsors in a way that still honors and shares that cinematic shared experience. And I think that's what you talked about earlier in the segment. You know, what's going to keep people going to theaters? It's that we are social animals. It's one thing. Anyone can just see a film now, but it's that event aspect. For me, going to a film festival can almost be like a cathartic sabbatical almost. I mean, you are going, usually you're traveling somewhere, you're meeting new people, you're having in-depth experiences and conversations that you otherwise just would not have if you weren't together. So mm-hmm. How could we recreate that? It was kind of tough. So we, luckily, I think the biggest challenge was just security and adaptability. You know, the film festival industry has not been very great at adapting to the virtual world. Just based, I think, on logistics, most film festivals are based in an organization that is a nonprofit. So we are still limited to nonprofit budgets as well. So, but luckily, there have been companies, including one we've worked with called Eventive. There's a slew of others, too, that have made it really easy to have digital screenings with Q&As, interactions with guests and filmmakers as well online. So that we were able to safely and securely show content, because I think it was almost a death sentence to a lot of filmmakers years ago to put mm-hmm. your film online in some capacity that would reduce your chances of getting distribution. So I think all of that went out the window this year. So really the whole industry coalesced and came up with this new solution. So we were able to pivot. But with Academy connections as well, we are one of 34 film festivals in the entire world, and there are thousands of film festivals that qualify for the Academy Awards in the short film categories of live action, animated, and documentary. So we're still able to move forward, and we had a record year. We had 6 short films nominated for the Oscars, and If Anything Happens, I Love You won the Oscar gold on Sunday. So we're really excited to see that. So it is a little bit different seeing these Oscar contending films from my basement as opposed to other means at festivals and in the right. office in the years past, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned something interesting, which was, you know, the hesitancy of filmmakers to have their films online. And then there's also, I think there's rules, right, to have things get into festivals. They can't have been screened, I guess, in some capacity. So do you think that's going to change at all, where some of these rules are going to seem a little bit outdated?
Yeah, I think, and just a great big overview of the film festival landscape. I think there's the huge market festivals like Cannes, Sundance, Toronto, Venice, where big movies, you know, Oscar season kicks off, there's wheeling and dealing, mm-hmm. Films are being purchased. And I think those kind of film festivals are the big ones people hear about, but the majority of film festivals are regional film festivals that serve a certain community as well. I'd say Heartland and Indie Shorts were kind of in that stratosphere too. Mm-hmm. So it's been interesting to kind of see how that's worked out as well. But those top tier film festivals, those big industry film festivals, do require premieres. So for like us, the film's already been online in some capacity, especially now, like you talked about in the last segment, where there's so much segmentation, there's so many different ways people can watch stuff. I think people like us at Heartland Film, we are seen as trusted curators. And again, putting it together in an event format is great in a way to reach out to people in new ways too. But definitely, I think putting your film out there virtually, there are rules and regulations with the Academy. The Academy did step back and they realized in what kind of a year that we've been in, and it'll probably be the same for next year too. But there used to be strict regulations, especially for short films, that you could not have your films online unless you won an Oscar qualifying film festival or four walled in New York or LA, essentially meaning that you're playing in an actual physical theater. Mm. So yeah, it has been relaxed a bit too. I think distributors as well, a lot of the kind of mid-tiered, smaller boutique distributors really worked with us as nonprofits at film festivals and art house cinemas to offer a lot of their stuff virtually and do profit shares too. So yeah, the paradigm has changed a lot. And I know that films that at film festivals that usually mandate a premiere, I've noticed some festivals have been a little bit more relaxed with that approach.
Yeah, and I wonder long-term if that's going to open up access to some people, because I'm sure there's fees for applying and different things, and maybe this will kind of level the playing field a little bit. I do want to ask you about the virtual festivals that you've been putting out. I mean, was it difficult to sell tickets for a virtual event?
Well, here's the thing. So Indie Shorts, we expanded. It's going to be in its fourth year, so it was its third year last July. And if you look at the timeline, South by Southwest canceled, and that sent shockwaves. Our friend at the Cleveland International Film Festival, they had everything ready to go. Banners printed, they had to cancel. They didn't have, the turnkey transition available to them to go virtual and stuff too. So it was interesting jumping into July not knowing what was going to happen. But we had Indie Shorts in its third year. We actually had higher attendance in its third year than we did the first 2 years, which were very successful. So I would say in terms of budgeting, in terms of expectations, I think everyone considered this past year to be a Band-Aid. Hey, mm-hmm. Expect for the worst. But, in terms of filmmaker connections, attendance to events, especially in July when a lot of people were still sheltering in place, usually great weather can be bad for in-person events when it comes to festivals and stuff too, like let's say in July. But yeah, we had an uptick in attendance. We had international people attending the festival as opposed to just being here locally if you're just an in-person event. So yeah, we were very fortunate in that regard too. And then we broke expectations as well for the Heartland International Film Festival in October and actually worked with the distributors and sold the first film out of a festival that went on to get Oscar shortlisted. So we were very fortunate in what turned into, like I said, Band-Aid, doom and gloom. It turned out to be a pretty good year, all things considered.
Mm-hmm. And what about folks that were attending these virtual events? Are they like, yeah, let's keep at it? Or are they waiting to get back to in person?
You know what? I think we're at the point now where I think people are ready to get back. But I think people do appreciate. A lot of filmmakers were hesitant to even submit their stuff on the circuit. So I think there is going to be a backlog of some content that's going to be submitted to festivals within the next year or two, which is something we were concerned about as well, too. But I think people are willing to get back. But in July, a lot of film festivals had pre-recorded discussions and Q&As with filmmakers. We had 128 short films from around the world. We did live Q&As to still have that interaction, like in small batches. And we were told we were one of the first festivals to do that. And we had international filmmakers calling in from 2 a.m. to 4 a.m. local time, and they appreciated it. So over 180 people participated for 128 films. And they were excited. But yeah, a lot of festivals are planning to either go in person or implement some type of in-person stuff too. But it is extremely dependent on the community, just the rates of vaccinations, the willingness of the community as well too. So it's up in the air now, definitely different than a year ago.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned earlier that, these film festivals, and I know also in the earlier segments, we heard people talking about going to the theater. Like there's this social aspect, sort of networking and seeing people. Do you see anything else that's missing with this virtual route that the festival had to take that you're looking forward to it going back to normal?
Yeah, I think engaged actual conversations. I know right now, like Q&As are kind of a chat room based function. Also just kind of networking events. There have been some really great virtual applications that have kind of come up where it feels like you can kind of take over as a presenter, and then you can have breakout rooms and tables to talk to different people. But yeah, it's still very, very formed, very structured. And I think a lot of the fun at a film festival is the spontaneity, the social groups, the people that you find, the unexpected relationships and experiences and stuff that you have too. So, I mean, nothing can fully replicate that in-person experience. But what I think will happen in the future is that we will continue to have this hybrid model. We've done surveys, and I think just to see, are people ready to go back in person? I think about 65% of our respondents just in the past week said they are comfortable going back safely and, you know, distanced in-person theater screenings too. But people also did mention that they want options. You know, people have a gazillion apps on their TV as well too for, you know, to consume media. And I think film festivals will be the same way. So I think we still will have virtual. We'll probably see like an evening premiere of a film, and then maybe the virtual premiere being the next day or something like that as well. Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting to see. I think the paradigm has changed a lot. And I think just accessibility too. I think there are a lot of underrepresented communities, including the disabled community, that we could have done better with as film festivals too. So, I mean, just between audio description, captioning, a lot of different things from that angle, that's another great positive silver lining that we're able to reach out to other communities that we otherwise wouldn't have been able to serve in years past.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I do think that's the silver lining of this pandemic, is just realizing through all these virtual events just how many communities were left out and now are able to be part of things. What's the next festival that you have planned?
Yeah, it's interesting. So I also am an associate programmer with Tribeca out of New York, and they were formed after September 11th. And that was their 20th anniversary, which is kind of very symbolic and serendipitous coming out of COVID. So they are planning to go in all five boroughs of New York in person. So that should be interesting to see. And so I do think with big film festivals like Tribeca going in person, if they do it successfully, all eyes are on them. Cannes, I believe, is still trying to go in person too, over in France, which is a totally different ball of wax over there right now too. But yeah, for us though, locally, you know, we'll keep our eyes peeled on Tribeca and all these other things too. We're doing the surveys, but we do have Indie Shorts coming up July 20th through 25th. We still have over $30,000 in cash prizes. We have an Indiana category too, so we honor Indiana filmmakers. We have the Oscar qualifying categories. We've had now 8 winners and 29 nominees in the past decade, which is phenomenal. So we are moving forward. So we are going to be doing a hybrid event again. We have plans to go back to the drive-in. We are looking at options. We are cautiously optimistic, barring any other planning or any other guidance from a state or, you know, federal agencies to look at some in-person theater events as well, probably around the downtown area. And we'll kind of take it from there. And then seeing how successful that is, it's kind of nice having a shorter / smaller, pun intended, festival in July, going into our 30th event, which is very feature film based, in October, to maybe pump that up and mm-hmm. go even above and beyond if things are successful in July.
So I'm curious, when you get all these submissions for your festivals, I mean, how do you choose who gets in and who doesn't? What's the criteria? I'm not asking for myself.
Sure. Yeah, you can kind of look, you know, if there are award categories, you know, like for shorts and features as well, too. You might have comedy. We established a horror section. So if you're a scary movie fan, we thought, hey, finally we can get a lot of those fans into Heartland screenings as well, too. We have the grand prizes as well. So it just really depends on the kind of the festival. Most festivals are mission driven, and we really want to celebrate impactful stories that are high quality, but also come from diverse perspectives. So it's kind of the flavor from that too. But for shorts, we kind of program by themes and category. We program a bunch, pretty much everything except for kind of out there experimental type content. But yeah, I consider myself the head prospector, and we have dozens and dozens of seasoned volunteers who are pre-screeners for us. So we have films that are submitted from around the world on a website called Film Freeway, which is kind of the industry standard as well. It's very easy if you're a filmmaker to go on there, submit your film to festivals, create a profile. And we have a record number of submissions for indie shorts. We have almost 3,300 short films to go through now. So it's going to be a sprint to continue to watch all the films, score them. So the pre-screeners initially score the films. We have some great interns and seasonal staff as well that watch the films. And it rises through the process. There's numerical values that get assigned to the films based on their initial screenings, and it'll move up to more trusted viewers at the second and third level. If I happen to see a film at a festival, I can't see everything. Again, with all this virtual stuff, I wish I just had like a USB port and you can just put everything in my head, but we're not there yet. So really it comes down to the films that have the top scores, the top reviews, but then also looking at different categories and flavors. We have a high school competition, Indiana Spotlights. We do want to spotlight Hoosier filmmakers as well and honor them with cash prizes and accolades and screenings too. So it just kind of goes from there. So yeah, so I'm kind of the head prospector, if you will, that kind of, for lack of a better term, chooses the fool's gold from the real deal. So it's been a lot of fun, and I love our team. And I've been loving attending virtual film festivals and seeing stuff myself too.
Well, a lot of moving parts there. I don't envy your position. what about, you know, as we get ready to wrap up here, what is something that you're really looking forward to with the festival coming up?
Oh, wow. I'm looking forward to, again, going back. You know, I don't think we can go back to a full normal, if that's even, you know, something, a term we can use, do that justice anymore, too. But it is going to be good to go back, you know, safely in person and kind of capture that magic again. You know, it's one thing, we want to share these stories. I see these movies now during the pandemic in my basement. Imagine sharing them with an audience, eliciting a shared reaction. So it'll be neat to do that back in person as well too. But again, and being able to connect with people, I mean, hosting international filmmakers was super hard with budget and limitations and travel. We're just able to effectively touch base and interact with filmmakers like we never have. So again, effectively working with these storytellers both virtually and in person is what I'm most excited about.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Greg Sorvig is Artistic Director for Heartland Film. Our producers are Drew Dodlin, Micah Yason, and Tim Brooks. Scott Cameron is our Managing Editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. Join us tomorrow for a conversation on natural disaster preparedness in Indiana. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. I'm Miriam Soeb. Thanks for listening. This is All In.